welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Today I'm excited to be speaking with Julia Aziz, and Julia is the mom of three. She's a licensed clinical social worker who's worked with youth and adult counseling, and she's also focused on helping new moms to find mindfulness. The reason that I'm having her on today is to talk about a new book that she's written called Lessons of Labor, where she discusses her own personal experiences through childbirth as well as a miscarriage. And so I don't know about you and your birth experience, but I just feel like there's nothing that can quite prepare you for childbirth, right? You never know quite how it's going to go, regardless of how much you study or how much you prepare. It just is what it is, and there's no way quite to describe it. It is literally the hardest physical thing you will ever go through. And so I think there's a lot of things that we're not told ahead of time to prepare for, and there's a lot of expectation, whether it's put on by ourselves or society. And I think this book is just so valuable because it really empowers you to feel like you know best what is best for you and your family. And that's what we're talking about today. We're also talking about expectations put on us by other people. It's a great conversation. I know you're going to love getting to know Julia today. So let's get to it with Julia. All right, I want to welcome Julia to the show today. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Jessica.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited to be chatting with you today because this is a topic that I know people are very passionate about, but don't always feel the room to speak about, and that's childbirth. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited, and I love this book that you read. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That must be so exciting. So let's just give a little background on yourself first. Tell me a little bit more about who you are and your upbringing and your career and your family.
Sure. So I'm from New York. I was born in New York City, but spent the second half of my childhood in upstate New York near Albany. And I come from a large extended Jewish family. My own family is just me and my younger brother and my parents, but I definitely had a strong influence of that extended family network as well. And I grew up, went through school. I went to the kind of high school that was from an 80s movie with a lot of cliques and a lot of peer pressure in that kind of way. And went to college in upstate New York as well. And then after that, really felt like I needed to head west to sort of get some space between where I'd come from so I could sort of discover who I was separate from that. And I moved to Santa Fe and did AmeriCorps and then came to Austin, where I happen to still be some 20 years later. Came here for grad school and social work. And there was a period in my 20s where I sort of sold everything I had and put the rest in a storage unit and went to Asia and studied Buddhism and yoga and really was in a period of deep self-exploration. And I came back to Austin because it was a place that I felt the most community, really. It felt like home. And then that's when I started really getting more into, into doing counseling work and did a seminary program in interfaith ministry. And I've done a lot of different things work-wise. Currently, I'm doing sort of a combination of life coaching, spiritual direction. I did a wedding last week for an 80-year-old lesbian couple. I'm doing a therapeutic dance workshop tomorrow, and I'm hosting a half-day retreat later in the month. So I'm doing a lot more facilitation and individual work again, as well as some teaching at an integrative medicine school here. And I have three children. My oldest is 10, almost 11. And then an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. And I met my husband through some nonprofit work here in Austin. And I was traveling in Asia and he went to Peace Corps. And when we somehow found each other again in Austin, and I don't know, 3 children later, here we are.
Your resume must be 10 pages long.
It could be.
If you really itemized it out. Wow, I love the diversity of your background. That is so amazing. And it really sounds like your life has just been a path of doing what feels true to you and kind of being in tune with what that next step looks like, even if it's not what the previous step was. Is that kind of what it is?
Yes, that's definitely true. I've made a lot, instead of sort of like climbing a ladder where one thing like goes to this next higher step, I feel like it's more been an intuitive pull to some next direction. It's all related to healing work. It's all related to serving people who are givers, really, you know, who give a lot to other people. And I try to bring in some sort of like empathy and self-care and compassion and self-awareness. So there's a lot of themes to all of it. And it's, I've always worked with people in one way or another, some kind of direct service to people. But yeah, it's taken a lot of different forms depending on where my
Right. pulled. Well, and now, like you said, you like to serve people who are givers. Mm-hmm. Aren't moms the ultimate givers, right? And and it's just the 24/7 act of service to serving your family. And so I think that's a really neat next chapter. So I am curious, though, as you have kind of traveled the world and gone on this kind of intuitive exploration path, how did motherhood change your life or your ability to follow that path? Because sometimes motherhood can kind of put us in these tighter parameters than maybe we'd had previously, because, I mean, we need more roots, their schedule, their needs, their everything above ours. Definitely. How did that kind of mesh with that type of approach to life that you previously had?
Definitely. I mean, it's motherhood has been the as my uncle used to say, it's the superhighway to personal growth. I mean, it's been, it's its own adventure. And it, like you said, it's very different than like, I'm gonna, you know, give up my apartment and go off to Israel or something, you know.
Right.
It's like very, you don't have that kind of freedom, and it can feel very restrictive. And I remember when I got like strong baby fever, feeling like, well, this was the next frontier, you know. I had these other sort of like international travel experiences and different kinds of work, but I felt like I really wanted to experience this this experience that only a woman could have, of being a mother and childbirth and having a baby and like raising children, and that too was, you know, an experience to have. And then in having it, it's not so romantic at all, you know. it's very mundane. There's a lot of repetition, and there's but on the other hand, it's also like, I never know what's next, you know, especially with my oldest child. It's always like every new thing, like, I don't know what to do about that. I haven't seen this before, you know. It's like, and actually each of the children too, like they're all different. So they all come across different challenges. And, so for me, like, I found the early motherhood period when they were small to be has so far been the most difficult, for me, because of that, like the lack of sleep and the needing to be home so much. And my spirit is kind of a traveler type, adventurous type spirit. And so it's really taught me how important it is to have roots. And even though I have some resistance to that, it's grounded me in this way that's allowed me to be more creative and to really build more, which I couldn't do when I was kind of like floating around from here to there. It requires a lot of a person, for sure.
Oh, I think that's really interesting that it forced you to be more creative and kind of, I don't know, that's really interesting. Because sometimes if you're floating around your life and you don't have that sense of obligation to kind of work in certain constraints, it can kind of leave you not as productive as you would have been. And I don't mean that in the to-do list type form, but as you would have, like, okay, I'm at home. Like, what passion project can I pursue here? What can I do here? And what can I do with my children? And what can I do for myself? And it kind of makes you think outside the box more than maybe when you were traveling in Asia or, you know, doing that.
No, it's really true. I feel like I actually, in some ways, I mean, this was not true 5 years ago, but but now that this is my first year, they're all in school.
Okay. Congratulations.
Particularly, thank you. It's been a big one. I feel like I have actually more creative space, and like you said, more productive, not in the like, you know, do the laundry yes. type of productive, but mm-hmm. like in the, you know, I have to be purposeful about whatever little time I have. And so if there is a, you know, like this dance workshop, for instance, that I'm doing tomorrow, like this was something that kept coming to me, like dance is a way that I feel the most joy without anything else outside of me. And how can I like bring that into my work? Like, I just have to make this a priority to be dancing more. And so it's, I have to find that. And there's very little chunks of time that I have that are not, you know, either my, I have a part-time job that go to there or to picking up the kid, you know, being with the kids. And so whatever space I have, it's really precious. And it has actually helped be more creative, because I remember like being in Thailand and at some point, and I was by myself and in a hotel, and it was like I had nothing I had to do, nothing at all, you know, like there was nowhere I was supposed to be, no one knew where I was, you know what I mean? It's completely like out there in the world, and that can be, I mean, that's almost too much space, you know. It's great for a period of time and retreat, but I feel like where I'm at now with the number of responsibilities I have actually makes it that much more necessary to carve out some space that is creative and passionate.
I love that. Well, let's go back to your early motherhood days and tell me about when you were approaching your first child and thinking about what that pregnancy would be like, what that childbirth would be like. What did you envision at that time?
Well, that pregnancy, so I had had a miscarriage before.
Oh, let's talk about that first. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, let's talk about that first.
That really affected the pregnancy that led to my first child, because I started out that one with so much fear. I mean, I was like, every time I went to the bathroom, I was expecting to see blood, and there was like such a high level anxiety. And I had already had, you know, it wasn't like the first time in my life I felt anxiety before, but it was an extreme time of it for that whole first trimester. Until we knew like the pregnancy was viable, and then I was able to relax into it more. And then as it went into the third trimester, I started, you know, the anxiety started coming up about childbirth, and you know, it was at a pretty deep survival level. Like, will this baby really come out? Like, will I really get to hold him? You know, will he really survive it? And I really wanted to have an unmedicated birth, and that was my own personal feeling about that. I certainly don't have any judgment or think anyone has to do any particular thing, but that was what I was hoping for. And I was giving birth in the, I was planning on giving birth in the hospital, and near the end of that pregnancy had some things come up with my doctor where I started feeling like she really wasn't supportive of that. And anyway, like that, it really brought up a lot. It's part of how I ended up writing this book, was because that pregnancy and that labor showed me so much about myself, and especially about fear and letting go of control. Because I really had some ideas of, not so much that I didn't have an expectation that a birth would go a certain way, because I had known people who had been through it and knew that I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
But it was just like the way I faced that uncertainty, like how much wanting to, you know, like write a birth plan and, you know, make sure everyone knew what I wanted, as if I could somehow that way control the experience so it wouldn't feel so scary.
And how did that affect the postpartum days? And were you still in that kind of controlling type mindset where you thought you could predict, okay, they're going to sleep this much, and they're going to eat this much, and they're going to latch on, and they're going to, you know, did you also approach it that way, or did the birth experience impact the way you viewed those early days?
Well, and that's the thing, like, I never was under the illusion that I could control those things. I more just wanted to, but
right,
I couldn't.
Right.
So the postpartum period, I would say, was even more difficult than the pregnancy or the childbirth. In retrospect, you know, that postpartum, especially after my first child was born, I just really was still in, I was in this sort of disbelief that this baby was so dependent on me for its survival. And I remember at around 10 weeks looking at my son and feeling all of this love and realizing like, oh my goodness, I haven't been allowing myself to enjoy that and really feel love, because I've been feeling such an intense protectiveness over him. And I was like still in this way, like just wanting to make sure he would survive. And he was, you know, I got blessed by a baby, my first baby being very, very active. He was just awake all the time, you know, like waking up randomly all the time, like at least four times a night, never Wow. had one of those like stretches of sleep. And it was always unpredictable. I remember he would poop like 25 times a day, like literally we would count. And I mean, he was just, he's a very, he doesn't do that, but he's a very active.
How embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor kid. No, he's just a very engaged, yeah. like ambitious kind of kid. And as a baby, he just was, always wanting to face outward and move. And even as he got older, just, he was one of those toddlers that would just like, you take him to a park and he would be running down the street. Like he could care less about, you know, playing with other kids or going on a slide. He just was on the go. Like, yeah. this, you know, from the moment he could walk, he was going around the corner, you know? And so, there was no controlling that. There was no predicting any of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you just don't know how your child's going to be wired. So you may get that mild-mannered, yeah. you know, go-with-the-flow kind of baby that first time. Or I had a very similar experience with my first as well, just facing mm-hmm. outward, you know, in the baby yeah. Bjorn when they say, like, oh, they should be facing inward at first because of their neck and the support and everything. Yeah. He didn't want that. Like, he yeah. was, like, craning his neck around from day yeah. two. And so, you know, and you really just have to, like, drop those expectations of what you thought it was going to be in order to really, I don't know, function and be able to, like, yeah. move on with what you have. And there's a beautiful quote in your book. Let me find it really quick. You said, "It's not about everything going the way I want it to. It's about how I respond to what is actually happening." Right. And so as he's, you know, you're taking him to the park and you're expecting him to just assimilate with the other children and, you know, share. And, you know, maybe you're not expecting that, but, you know, that's kind of the vision of the so perfect mom. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, just dealing. OK, what are we dealing with? What are the sleep issues we're dealing with? What is the eating issues we're dealing with? And being realistic, like, you know, I can't change that, but I can change and I can choose how I deal with it. And how I react to things. And I think that's really healthy.
Definitely. And I think when it's your first child, it's particularly hard because you don't have any context for it, you know, and it's easy to start. Like, I remember I would compare myself and I'm like, how come, you know, my friend's son is just sitting there on the picnic blanket with her and I'm like chasing this guy all over the place, yeah. you know, like, why am I so depleted and what are they doing right that their baby is now sleeping through the night at 6 months, you know? Mm-hmm. And none of that helps whatsoever. And I think with the first baby or if you have an only child, there's no, it can feel like it's all you, you know, it's like, right. I felt like it was something that I was doing wrong. And if I just got it right, then everything would go easier. And I think over time, it was like a recognition of, no, like every child is different and I'm my own person too, you know? So I have to find my own way of responding that works for all of us.
Yeah, and so did you get to that place?
Yeah, three children later. Yeah.
And you're still working on it, yeah. And we always yeah, are.
No, it's so much better now. I mean, it's so much better now, but it took a long time to kind of surrender to that. And also just to have the perspective, it took, you know, him particularly getting older. And then, after the second one as well. And I did feel like by the time I was pregnant with my third, I felt like, okay, I get it. I don't know what's happening. So yeah. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah.
You know, like instead of like, I get it. I know what I'm doing now. Cause I've had to, it was more like I had learned how to just like deal with things as they come instead of, you know, thinking just because I like pack the diaper bag and, you know, have all the snacks that we're going to show up and everything, it's going to be a good day. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
You know, I think
totally.
I talk about that in the book too. It's like, if I see a good day is like everything went smoothly and no one had a meltdown and, you know, then that's sort of destined to fail. Whereas if I can see a good day is like, hey, like this whole thing fell apart, but I was able to then readjust, you
right.
know, like, good job, mom.
No, absolutely. And yeah. and I love that part in the book. And this is what this made me think of when I thought, okay, our days are not going to be immune of tantrums when you have toddlers. But yeah. if I make it through the day where I don't have a tantrum, that is a victory, right? And so it's like, if I'm not freaking out to their freakouts, that is a win. That means I'm making progress and we're all making progress, right? So it's just tempering those expectations and what's realistic for the stage that you're in.
Right. And I think also if you do have a tantrum, you know, like if you're able to forgive yourself for that, mm-hmm. like that's an even greater victory, I think, because it is really hard. And we do lose our patience sometimes, you know, and we don't parent perfectly. And I think in this era of, I'm a therapist, and it's just like, I'm creating all these issues in my kids.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, stuff to take to their therapist later. It's like, we're still human beings. Like, we didn't become perfected people before we became parents, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, if you have a day and everything goes wrong and you fall apart and it all is a big mess, it's just like, can you forgive and move on? Because if you can forgive, then you can start over.
Absolutely.
Instead of, like, getting into a cycle of shaming and getting really down on yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I love that. And so going into your third pregnancy with your second child, how did you approach that differently? And what did you expect in that experience now that you've had one?
Mm-hmm. In my second pregnancy, I remember one of the big differences. So with that one, I had started working with a midwife for a home birth. And one of the things she said to me early on was, she was like, basically, don't look anything up on the internet that has to do with pregnancy symptoms or health or anything like that. And she's like, that you just don't need to feed any anxiety, because it's true. You look something up, like if your kid has a fever and, you know, their knee hurts, and you look it up on the computer, it's going to say, like, brain damage or death might result from this condition, right? And so, I mean, that's just a small example, but I think one difference in that pregnancy was my really, like, looking inside my own body to understand what was going on, or maybe not even understand, but just, like, allowing different sensations to happen and different emotions to come up without trying to figure it out or make it better or, like, assume the worst about things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a much easier pregnancy, except for the fact that I got a really bad flu, like the worst flu I've had in my whole life, when I was about 14 weeks pregnant. And that was very challenging, because I had a fever for like 5 days, and it went away, and it came back for 5 days, and I was really worried about the effect on the baby. And so I had to kind of, like, go through a different process with that one as well, of facing that and the fears that it brought up. And but overall, it was, you know, it's like each, I don't know, I just think each pregnancy is its own, whatever you need to learn from it, it's its own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm sure after having that first experience that didn't go quite like you thought it would, or with your relationship with your doctor and things like that, and then the previous miscarriage, it's like all these individual experiences add up to you being a different person in that pregnancy and in that childbirth experience than you were previously. And so it impacts the way that you view those things.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And the difference with the second, too, is having this super active toddler.
Yeah. You know? Oh, so yes. Yeah. You can't just, okay,
the
I'm time tired.
For, like, the inward navel gazing.
Yes. I'm just going to lay down. Yeah. No. They're just going to run circles around you and then dump something on your head. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Very tiring.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And so, at what point did you start writing this book?
Well, I mean, the idea for it came not long after that first birth, really, because I wrote down after each of my labors, I wrote, like, really, like, probably within the first 12 hours after giving birth, wrote it all down in my journal, everything that happened. And that's not, some people will say to me, like, that's amazing, you made the time to do that. That was, like, I could not sleep at all. I was so amped up. Like, that was me and my, like, mania. So, so those stories came out right away after the birth. But I had the idea probably sometime after my first one was born, that because what was going on in that postpartum period, I was realizing, like, oh my goodness, like, it was reminding me of that trip I took, that year off I took, where I was traveling around the world, and that it was like I had just been through this very intensive experience of childbirth, and now is in a postpartum period, and it was sort of mirroring, like the emotional and spiritual challenges that I was having were mirroring what was going on with me in labor, and that all of that was really like a microcosm of what's going on all the time in life, you know, like just in terms of how I respond to things happening in life. And so I just had the concept idea of, you know, of childbirth as a metaphor, not just childbirth itself, but just the way we approach something that is forces us to confront pain and to face the unknown, you know, and that's like an intensive experience of it. But really that's what, you know, getting up every day and driving to work is also, even in the mundane. It's always unknown. We think we know what's going to happen, but we really don't. And so that's where the idea came for, like, what are the kind of life lessons I'm learning in these experiences? And maybe if I can write about this, not only will it help me process it, but maybe it will be relevant to someone else, you know, to another mom that is struggling or just going through a lot of different stuff, you know?
Absolutely. It can be so incredibly validating to hear somebody else's personal story. And I mean, you get nitty gritty in this book about your birth experience and where you're at. And I think that is so helpful. I love hearing other people's birth experiences, especially prior to my own, even if it's a challenging one or had a hard outcome or something. I mean, it just is so validating that I can know, because the more that you just can open your mind to the possibility of what's coming, you're not like, oh, I'm the only one, or, oh, I'm nervous about this happening or that happening, or, oh, I didn't even know that could happen, you know, things like that. And so that uncertainty and those question marks that lie, I think it is so great to open up that conversation and for you to be vulnerable and be willing to put your stories out there, I think gives a lot of other women permission to feel validated in their own stories.
And that was really the point for me, you know, because I could have just written some things down for myself in my journal, you know, but the idea was, that some woman would be reading it somewhere while her baby was napping, and it would make her feel less alone and make her feel like it was okay. Whatever she was going through was okay. And whatever feeling she was having about, whether it was about her childbirth or was it about motherhood or it was just about, in general, living, you know, that... Mm-hmm. Just to be authentic and to know that this is, you know, it's a human experience. Whatever you're going through, it's in the range of human experience, and it's valid.
Absolutely. And so you talk with new moms groups and about mindfulness, and I assume about their birth experiences and things like that. What have you heard from other moms about their experiences, and how does that influence the message that you want to continue to put out there?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard so many different birth stories, and like you, I love hearing people's different stories. One of the things that I've really liked, somebody wrote a review of my book who had a C-section that wasn't planning on that and really didn't want that. She had wanted to have a natural birth, and that was one of my concerns. I didn't want people to take from my book, like, because I had had these unmedicated vaginal births that somehow I thought that I don't know, that there was something that was better about that or right about that, or kind of get in those mommy wars about how you're supposed to do things. Because really the message was more like, how can you make meaning out of your own experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And so one thing this woman who wrote a review said was that it was really helpful for her to read my story, even though my stories were different than hers, because it helped her to find the meaning in what happened to her. Mm. You know, like, it wasn't what she wanted. How that went was not how she wanted. But it, like you said, it changed her in some ways. You know, she had to give up. You know, she had to, like, surrender to, like, this is what is needed, and I don't know if this is right or not, and there's so many decisions to be made, and there's all these pressures and fears and so much happening. And she was able to look at that more as a process, as a journey, rather than it was wrong and it wasn't supposed to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of what I've heard from, or, you know, moms whose babies came too early, or babies who came out and there was something like, you know, or ended up in the NICU for a long time. And there's so many different stories. Part of when my hesitation in writing the book initially was like, well, I've been so lucky, you know what I mean? Like, do I deserve to be writing a book? I don't have a big trauma to be sharing here, and, you know, people only want to read about something more
dramatic,
right? And And I was like, no, but this is just my experience, and it's neither better nor worse than anyone else's, you know? And so this is how I'm making sense of that and how I'm using that. And everyone has different challenges in life, you know? And so I've really appreciated hearing from other women what they've gone through, and I don't know. My message, I would say more than anything, is just about, you know, trusting yourself and having compassion and supporting each other, you know,
absolutely, rather than comparing. And I wanted to read a quote that ties in really nicely to that. You wrote, "Without even intending to, I often look to other women to answer questions in my own life. I don't think this habit is unique to me. It seems to go back to a time when my girlfriends and I would consult each other before getting dressed for middle school. So now as an adult, if my friend is a content stay-at-home mom, shouldn't I be too? And the answer is, only if I am genuinely content." And I think that is so true. Sometimes we look at social media or the friends of the neighborhood or the PTA president or whoever it is that you are naturally seeing regularly. And sometimes we're seeing people regularly that we don't actually know anymore in this day and age, right? Yep. And we're seeing this and we're thinking, well, they're able to make dinner for their family that's Whole30 compliant every single night. Like, shouldn't I be able to, like, have these healthy meals and not have picky eaters? And shouldn't I be able to have a natural childbirth and that's the way to go? Or, oh, I had a C-section. What a bummer. Or, you know, we're comparing, and it is true. Like, it goes way back where we have started, you know, asking, you know, oh, should I wear this? Should I wear that? Should I do this? Should I do that? And we're always consulting with our friends. But there's a difference between consulting for the sake of just getting someone's opinion, which is fine. And it's good to, like, take a survey sometimes. But then there's ultimately the intuitive, but I know what's best for me. And ultimately, I'm going to do what is best for me. Mm-hmm. But that's hard to find when it's really getting layered on top of kind of society and other people having a greater influence over yourself than even your own intuition.
Right. I think it's very easy to fall into that. And we're particularly vulnerable, you know, when we're facing something new. And so, for instance, new motherhood is a lot like that, because you don't know what you're doing. So you're looking to other women to see how they're doing it. And then all the comparing starts up. And it's always going on, right? And all kinds of things. And what I've been noticing if I feel like I'm doing that again, where I'm asking a lot of friends' opinions, or, you know, needing to tell the same story a lot, and I start noticing that I'm hoping to get a certain response, and that to me is a clear sign that intuitively that is what I need to hear.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, if I'm wanting everyone to be like, I don't think that's a good idea, then that's really me knowing it's not a good idea, and I want validation for that, you know? Right. But nobody can live your life for you, so, and nobody's, like, you know, we all have different backgrounds, and we have different family structures that we're in now, and we have, you know, different responsibilities, and there's just no one can tell you how to live your life, you know, and that really does come from inside your own heart. And I feel like the more, like, women do such wonders for each other when we lift each other up, you know, but when we compare with each other, it's not good at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what would you tell that mom that's feeling ashamed that she had a C-section and that's not what she hoped for, or she hasn't been able to breastfeed, or she's choosing not to breastfeed, or any of those other life choices that may draw some negative comments or criticisms? What would you tell that mom that just is struggling to live according to her own beliefs and values?
Yeah, I think it's really important to be gentle with yourself and in whatever that means to you, but to really give yourself positive, you know, loving compliments and support, like really just reminding yourself, you know, you're making those, sometimes you're making a choice and sometimes you're just doing what has to be done and it's not what you would have wanted, but it's what you need to do to take care of yourself and your family, you know, and remembering that, and, you know, finding at least a few or even just one person in your life who can support you in your choices, you know, that can remind you when you forget. Because I think we need a lot of compassion when we're, you know, putting ourselves down in that way or feeling like we're not living up to some standard that we have. So anything that kind of brings you into your own heart I think is really important when you're in a place like that. And it takes time too, you know, I mean, it just, sometimes it takes a while before, you know, what I've seen with women, for instance, who wanted to breastfeed and ended up having to give that up for many different reasons, is that, you know, there's grief involved in these things. There's mm-hmm. a real grieving process that happens. And so having some patience about that, and, you know, you can't too quickly jump to like, well, what meaning can I come from this? And what can I learn? You know, it's like, it doesn't work like that. Like, you have to go through the feelings, be gentle. And over time, you might find, you know, something else that you get out of that experience, but you can't rush that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think sometimes we do try and rush that. Right? We try and just say, okay, I'm just not going to worry about what people think. I'm just not going to care. I'm just going to do whatever I want. But just like asserting that that's what you're going to do, the next time that you fall prey to the comparison, you're going to feel defeated and like a failure. Yeah. And so I think saying, I'm going to strive to like listen to my own intuition more, or I'm going to, you know, look at Instagram less, or I'm going to, and make those small steps in order to move away from that comparison, but just to like cold turkey, I'm just not going to do it anymore. I mean, it's unrealistic and you're just setting yourself up for failure. Mm-hmm. So to say like going into this pregnancy, I'm going to know that it's not going to go exactly how I envision it, but these are my intentions going forward. And so if we can do that, I don't know, it kind of sets the stage a little bit differently and sets our expectations differently.
Definitely. And I've seen that happen with women, for instance, whose first birth went really off the tracks from what they were hoping for, you know, and it was a really traumatic experience. I've seen them get pregnant again and approach that next birth so differently, you know, like with very little expectation and with hope for something different, but with a whole different level of acceptance that they just have no idea. And oftentimes that second one goes completely differently and much more how they were hoping. Sometimes not, but either way, it's like they've learned how to surrender in this way that has really made them stronger as well as more vulnerable.
Absolutely. And like you said, after suffering that miscarriage for that first pregnancy and then going into your subsequent pregnancies, there was that fear that you were worried that the next one wasn't going to be viable and, you know, and until you're out of the woods. And so how does that shape you as a person? How do you go about releasing the fear when you go through something really traumatic or really hard or suffer a loss like that? I mean, I feel like as women, sometimes we don't even acknowledge that we've had a miscarriage. Like, we feel kind of awkward telling people if we've gone through that, because it's like we're soliciting sympathy even though it was still early. Or, you know, and we create these excuses of why we shouldn't feel the grief that we do about it. That's what I've heard from women, at least. I haven't experienced it myself. But I don't know. How do you get over that fear of, I don't know, sharing those things that are personal and meaningful to you when you feel like maybe it's not something that, I don't know, you want to share or people want to hear.
Right. And not everyone will be compassionate or really, really can hold that. And so I do think, like I was saying, you know, to find the people you can really trust and who are really have your back, you know, are going to be on your side and are going to have patience with you no matter what you're going through. And there are times in our lives when we kind of need to go more inwards and keep those people around, but get a little more space from the people that we feel are pushing us when we're not ready to be pushed, you know, or just like want everything to be okay and everything to, you know, us to just like jump back in and be normal, you know what I mean?
Right.
And really, there's, you know, our culture in general has a really hard time with grief. And it's like, so a miscarriage isn't something you're even supposed to be grieving, right?
Right.
Like, it's not like you get a bereavement leave because you had a miscarriage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a not something that people even talk about, you know? But it does bring up so much emotion, not for everyone, but for a lot of women. And there's also a lot of hormones going on. So it's
sure.
But all that same goes on in postpartum with all the emotion going through. So, surrounding yourself only with people that can really support you and maybe going a little more, retreating a little more from anyone who can't hold that until you're ready to be out in the world. And I mean, I'm a big believer in expressing emotion so that it can pass through. And whether that's mm-hmm. through writing or art or dance or walking or talking, you know, or sharing a story, for me, it really helps to not just like push it down. You know, for other people, it's to compartmentalize and just be like, you know what, that's over and I'm going to focus on my work right now and then we'll try again in 6 months. You know, for some people that's healthy and that's how they best can cope, you know? And so I wouldn't impose my way of doing this on anyone else, but I just know for me, I'm a pretty emotional person, and that if I am trying to like push it down too much, it's just gonna come out in some unexpected way when I don't want it, you know? And it's better for me to carve out the space to express it and then not get stuck in that, because that's another thing. It's like we can get really stuck in a deep emotion, you know, and like kind of like get in the head and like retelling the story and it just dramatizing the whole thing. And so I feel like some level of having boundaries around it and it making space for that grief, and also making space to have times where you're doing something else, where you can focus on something else, is really important too.
Yes, because sometimes being in a space of grief can be all consuming.
Yeah, and it can be. And I think that sometimes people do need to go there, you know, like they need to go to the bottom of it. And,
sure.
And they can't hear any encouragement.
Right.
It's like,
no, that's
want to,
so
right?
true. Yes.
But then one day, like a little light peeks in, you know, and then maybe a little more here and there. And I know I posted this on Facebook maybe a year or so ago, because I was doing work in hospice, working with people who were dying or who had just died, working with their families. And I wrote something about like sadness is not always sad. Like grief is not always sadness. You know, like you might be all of a sudden find yourself like laughing with a friend about something totally silly, and then in the next moment feel really angry that happened, and then go deep into depression. You know, like grief is a whole bunch of different emotions. And so just knowing that sometimes it's okay to feel okay, even if something really hard is happening. Because we forget that. We think, you know, it's like either it's all serious or it's all play, and it's not really like that. Life is all things.
Absolutely. Do you have any specific resources or anything that could help people that might be going through a time of grief? You sound very well versed in this. I would be very curious to learn more.
Because I read a lot, but I have a horrible memory for titles of things.
Well, maybe
like,
you can email me.
And then I cannot remember it all.
Email me, and I'll put them in the show notes if you have any resources.
Okay.
Because this is definitely a topic, whether or not you're going through something difficult right now or not. Inevitably, there's somebody in your life that is. And if you want to be a good friend and somebody that is more compassionate and understanding individual, I think really educating ourselves on different aspects and of different emotions and different life experiences, I think that can only benefit you.
Definitely.
Yeah, I love that. So your book is Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood by Julia Aziz. And it's just a great read. I got through it really, really quickly. So it's just a nice little light read. Like you said, if your baby's napping, it's easy to just go through a chapter and just feel a connection with another mom. That's kind of how I felt going through the book. So I think that was really great. Is there anything that you think is really important for a woman to know before she has a baby or is preparing for childbirth? Is there anything that is really important to know and to prepare for?
I think I would say the most important thing to know is that you don't know, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it's that, especially if it's your first time, you're going to get so much advice, you know, like everybody, the person next to you in the grocery store, you know, has something to tell you about pregnancy or childbirth or having a baby, you know, and to, you know, just take what resonates for you and leave the rest.
Sure.
And that you'll find out what you need to know when you need to know it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. Well, Julia, you are so wise, and I love your life experience that has led you to where you are today. And I just really thank you for sharing your motherhood journey and your experiences in this book. I just think it's amazing. Where can people pick up Lessons of Labor?
It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can also order it through your local bookstore.
Awesome. And I'll put show notes at extraordinarymomspodcast.com with links to picking up that book in case people are interested. So what's next for you in the coming year? Are you a goal setter, or what do you how do you approach the new year?
How do I approach the new year? I am definitely feeling like less sort of active goal setting and more receptive, making choices from a place of intuition.
Yeah.
I'm still going to do the, I need to show up and I need to do the work, and I can feel like there's a lot of new work emerging, but I also don't want to go about life in a, like, too busy, you know, like sure. scattered and this and that and this and that. So I'm feeling very much like, okay, I can have a lot going on, but I really need to take it one day at a time and just like receive, like you were saying, like just enjoy, like just I'm enjoying this conversation. I'm not going to worry about what my next thing is, you know?
Yeah,
just,
no,
like,
absolutely. Absolutely. And I had an episode come out in January about instead of goal setting, intention setting for the new year. Because mm-hmm. I feel like for the phase that I'm in, having a list of goals that are, you know, measurable and specific and everything, that's not really where I'm at in life right now. You know, I'm going to fall short on those types of things. It's even hard for me to come up with those types of goals right now for where I'm at. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to set some intentions for the different areas of my life so that I can be the kind of person that I want to be a year from now. And do it intentionally by mm-hmm. doing specific things and focusing. So whether it's developing connection with my kids or communication with my husband, I'm picking up meditation as a kind of a more self-aware type approach for the coming year. And so things like that, those intentions that I'm setting, they don't have an end point, but it's definitely a vehicle to help me get to where I want to be and who I want to be in a year's time. So that kind of sounds like a similar mm-hmm. approach.
Yeah, I feel like in a nutshell, because I've been thinking about it a lot recently, and I was like, you know what, I think my intention for this year is to worry less and trust more.
Yeah,
and that has sort of been a theme for a long time, yeah. But it's like I can always, you know, and it's gotten better and better, but it can go to even deeper levels yeah. of like truly trusting and being just a vehicle for you know, spreading compassion and support to other people. And it doesn't all have to be like generated from my own energy.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that so much. Well, you are so amazing. I just want to keep talking to you. I want you to live next door so I can like come to you with all my problems.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the conversation.
This has been really wonderful. It's been a breath of fresh air for me. This is a great way to start my morning. Well, I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. It is. And sometimes, does it have to feel okay to believe that?
No, it might not feel okay a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just nothing, there's nothing my pre-motherhood self would have accepted.
Yeah.
In some ways, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I would just want to be gentle with her, kind of what, like I was saying before, just to say, you know, like, slow down.
Right.
It's going to be okay.
I love that. Well, you're wonderful. I hope people pick up your book, Lessons of Labor. I think it is such a valuable resource to moms that are looking for other birth stories to help empower them in their own choices that don't have to look like yours specifically, but definitely give you courage and, I don't know, permission to just make your own decisions and to trust yourself. I love that message so much. So thank you, Julia, for chatting with me today. This has been really wonderful.
Thank you, Jessica.
I hope you have an awesome day. You as well. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. I want to thank Julia for being on the show today. Wasn't she so amazing? She has such an interesting background that has led her to where she is today. And I think there's just so much we can learn from people that have walked a different path than us. That is why I love this conversation so much. So thanks for being on the show, Julia. This was a real treat. As always, you can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3 to get more information on the podcast. On Facebook, we're at Extraordinary Moms Podcast, and our website is extraordinarymomspodcast.com. I hope everyone has an awesome day today, and I'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.